What the hell is a dotard? That's the question right now, burning through the internet and through various medias. So I am here to decipher it for you. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Glad to have you on the program today. 1-800-222-5222 is the phone number, and sam@samnation.com is the email. If you haven't heard, President Kim Jong-un has fired back at Trump. Apparently, he's a little peeved that Trump called him Rocket Man at the United Nations. And so he's called him a dotard. And the internet is now trying to figure out what the heck a dotard is. Not since Trump tweeting Kofif have people been in such a tizzy. So interested, so curious in a new vocabulary word. Okay, first of all, these things come about because they're getting translated. They're getting translated from a radically different language. So you've got this guy, you know, babbling in North Korea, and he's speaking Korean, and he's saying these things, and now he's got a translator, and they're using very archaic language. Merriam-Webster says that it has something to do with being mentally deranged or having some diminished capacity in old age. I don't know. Sounds good to me. Also, did you know, everybody's talking about dotard, but also he called him a frightened dog. Kim Jong-un called Trump a frightened dog, which I think is a far more compelling and frightening insult considering what happens to dogs in North Korea. Well, and that's the lucky few that have dogs to eat. You know, I mean, no, the country's starving. Of course, listen, North Korea for the first time is feeling some pain. They got Trump at the UN who unequivocally said, you keep up with this, we're going to turn you into a parking lot. And then it got followed up today with some pretty radical sanctions. No, this is huge. They got Chinese banks will not be doing any business with North Korea. Any country that wants to continue business as usual has to have banking. You have to have the international flow of money. Nothing happens without money. Trust me, even the most oppressive regimes like North Korea require international banking ties because they've got to move money around. The way that they, everything from trade, even if they get international aid, it comes in the form of cash. And that cash has to be somehow routed into the country. And in order to get into the country, it has to come from the outside of the country. And if the United States, together with the UN, tighten restrictions to the point where no foreign banks are doing business with North Korea, it's bad. Very bad for them. But I am, of course, skeptical of the Chinese. I don't trust the Chinese communists to do anything. And it's very much in their interest to continue trading with North Korea. And that's what's come out of all of this. This is why none of the previous sanctions have ever worked. The only threat, the only leverage that we have as Americans, the only leverage we have is against China is to threaten China with what? Pulling the plug on our trade, on doing business with China. I will tell you that of course, it would be tough for our economy, but it would be, we could kill China economically. And I think that's what you're, if they really believe that we are willing to do that, then I think perhaps they'll go along with it. But I still think they'll cheat. They'll do anything they can to get around because they do profit from that relationship there. And they intend on keeping good relations with North Korea. They are an ally. So we will see what the fallout is from this war of words. And if I figure out anything more about this dotard insult, I will let you know. But one interesting thing about this. You know, the leftists everywhere, you know, Democrats, people who hate Trump, they're seizing on this word and they are loving up Kim Jong-un for calling Trump this word. typical Democrats. They don't even know what the word means, but they're already celebrating it. And is it just me that I find it somewhat ironic that you have a murderous, I mean, with no dispute, right, a murderous despot, a guy who oppresses his people like probably no other dictator in the world. I mean, you breathe wrong in North Korea and they lock you up, your parents, your children. I mean, it's everybody up and down in the family. They lock you up and they don't, not just prison. I mean, these camps are horrendous. And here you have stupid liberals celebrating the fact that this guy, you know, this guy called Trump a dotard. And I'm seeing comments, this is even people in the media saying things like, well, I can't believe I find myself agreeing with the North Korean dictator. And I'm listening to this, I'm going, this is sick. You are sick. You hate Trump so much that you find this compelling. Anyway, this will all come and bite them in the butt. Just you wait. We'll follow this as it continues to unravel. Speaking of unraveling, do you remember Valerie Plame? If the name rings a bell, it's because she is the CIA babe, the blonde bombshell bimbo that was supposedly outed by the Bush administration, right? She was the guy. She and her husband both, I think, were in the CIA, and she was a CIA a covert operator and an analyst, but I think she was more of just a desk person. She wrote a report about some uranium stuff somewhere, and it was hostile to the Bush administration. And so, supposedly, in retaliation for her opposition to the Bush administration, they outed her to a journalist. Now, it all turned out to be a big mistake, but in that process, if you'll remember, Scooter Libby, who was the chief of staff, I think, to Dick Cheney, he ended up getting busted by the independent prosecutor there. Anyway, big fallout from it. Valerie Plame, ladies and gentlemen, darling of the left. That's the most important thing here. She has been to all the people who hated Bush. I mean, Valerie Plame was like Joan of Arc. Well, Valerie Plame today on Twitter stepped into a metaphorical pile of dog do. And I don't know if it was a Korean dog, but it was a pile of dog do, and let me tell you why and how. So she tweets out an article. She retweets an article that is by a guy named Giraldi. The title of the piece is this: America's Jews Are Driving America's Wars. It's not even a question mark. It's a freaking statement. She tweets this out, and immediately Twitter has a visceral reaction to this. Everybody's, what the hell are you doing? And here are her responses in order. First, she says, first of all, calm down, everybody. Retweets don't imply endorsements. Yes, very provocative, but thoughtful. Many neocons are Jewish. Then she says something about she's not in favor of war with Iran. Blah, blah, blah. And she just keeps justifying herself in this position. So, after a little bit, she goes, okay, folks, look, I messed up. I skimmed this piece, zeroed in on the neocon criticism, blah, blah, blah. I missed gross undercurrents to this article. I didn't do my homework. Now, this is a CIA analyst. Let me ask that question first, right? Is she not someone who, by training, by virtue of her profession, does research? Can I ask that? Right? I think, no? So she's somebody who presumably does research. Now, the article. This is important because I think that this isn't just limited to Valerie Plame. I think that when you have the left going after Steve Bannon and Trump and calling them, you know, closeted Nazis and all this stuff, the greatest irony in all of that is that there is deep-rooted anti-Semitism on the left. And it comes from a variety of things. I want to explore it a little bit. But, I mean, first of all, the left hates Israel. It hates Israel. And this So the left's fascination with a lot of stuff that is anti-Jewish goes back historically. But in modern history, it has to do with Israel. You've got it in the hierarchy of victimhood. Israel is low on the totem pole. Liberals see Palestine as the victims of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That's a fact. It's always been this way. And I've had these conversations with people for years. And I find it so ironic then that it's always the Republicans that are the haters and the Nazis and all this nonsense. It's just words. And this article that she retweeted, that she read, all of her excuses are nonsense. All of them are nonsense. Because this article is unbelievable. Let me just indulge me. Let me give you some. Let me give you some little snippets from this. The author starts the article saying that he went to a conference, and he's talking about war and how so many politicians want to go into war. And he's an anti-war guy. He's a former intelligence officer. So right, he's an intelligence officer. This guy used to be in our government. And he has a guy come up to him and he goes, "Why doesn't anyone ever speak honestly about the 600-pound gorilla in the room? We know who it is. It's American Jews." This is the start of the article. It's sick. And the author goes, "You know what? This guy's right." And he writes an article about why this guy that came up to him at the conference is right. Here's some quotes. "Jewish groups and deep-pocketed individual donors not only control the politicians, they own and run the media. No one will hear about or from the offending party again if you criticize them." This is like straight out of Nazi Germany, like Goebbels propaganda. And Valerie Plame, leftist darling, just absolute hero, okay, hero of the American left, is retweeting this stuff and defending it for a large part of the day. The author actually writes a list of prominent Jews in the government, people that are either Jewish or of Jewish descent, lists them, some perverse like Schindler's List deal here, and says, "These are the problems. These are the people, you know, they're all Iran haters." The premise of it is that people are getting us into war with Iran. And I'm reading this and I'm going, well, I think Iran's a problem too. I'm not Jewish. I'm reading this. I go, well, wait, hold on a second. This is absurd. I don't have to be an Israeli Jewish puppet to think that Iran is a monstrous country that wants to kill us. This is so incredibly absurd. Another quote. "So it is safe to say that much of the agitation to do something about Iran comes from Israel and from American Jews." Sickening. Then this author goes on to say, "For those American Jews who lack any shred of integrity," meaning, you know, that they need to, I guess, be more pro-Iran, "the media should be required to label them at the bottom of the television screen." This is about as vile and disgusting a piece of journalism, if you can call it that, that I have read in a long time. What is that reminiscent of? Isn't that reminiscent of what Hitler did? The Nuremberg decrees? Putting Stars of David, identifying Jews? This is ridiculous. Oh, by the way, if you think I'm taking it too far, he actually says that would be kind of like a warning label on the bottle of rat poison. So when I want to come back, because you are not going to believe this. If you think this is isolated to Valerie Plame, I listened today on CNN to someone, and this is, by the way, an operative of Hillary Clinton's. This is a Democratic Party operative defending her, calling it a whoopsie-daisy on social media. This isn't a whoopsie-daisy. This goes to the core, to the heart of many Democrats' ideologies, and it's sick. And the I'll tell you, it all goes down. It comes down to Israel. And the fact is, this is, I'm just going to tell you, it's a very unpopular opinion, but the fact is liberals love victims. And Israel is a strong country that's defended itself against all odds. What they have done is nothing short of incredible. But the left is obsessed with Palestine, with Palestinians, and they want their victims. Democrats always turn to victims. Find them wherever they can and exploit them and talk about them. And anybody that's enough, that is possibly a cause, even theoretically, of their victimhood is enemy number one. And it comes out in these pieces. It's just gross. Like, you want to hear the CNN thing. You want to hear what they said. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, Thursday night. And we're talking about this tweet that Valerie Plame, darling of the left, former CIA analyst, foe of the Bush administration, sent out this article. And then she defended it. And in this article, I was just getting to some of the more vile stuff in it. The author of the piece at one point writes that, you know, that Jews who are so violently opposed to being reasonable. Let's see how he puts it here. It's all about Iran and how the title of the piece, America's Jews are driving America's wars. Okay. Then he says in this, for those American Jews who lack any shred of integrity, the media should be required to label them at the bottom of the TV screen. Another line says that would be kind of like a warning label on a bottle of rat poison. So not only does she retweet it, but she defends it. Well, here's CNN today, John Berman and Adrienne Elrod. Now, she's a former operative of the Hillary Clinton campaign. So she's a Hillary stooge. And they have her on as a talking head. And they're talking about Valerie Plame. And listen to the exchange between Berman and Elrod. And in particular, listen to Elrod's kind of just real dismissive. I don't know. There's no condemnation. Listen to this.
Valerie Plame, former CIA operative, linked to an article on Twitter today titled, I want to read this, America's Jews are driving America's wars. Now, Valerie Plame, well known, of course, over the years for various things, but she was very critical of President Trump on a number of issues, including for emboldening white supremacists here. She later sort of apologized, said she hadn't read the full article, but her past tweets not on her side here. And this article is fairly repugnant and flat and anti-Semitic.
Yeah, look, you know, she apologized on Twitter. I think she made it very clear that she regrets tweeting that article. And by the way, this is a lesson for all of us who are active on social media. You got to sometimes read below the first two sentences of anything that you're tweeting before you decide that you agree with that.
Yeah, it's a tough lesson to learn. And one wonders, again, if you look at her past tweets, what exactly her intention was or her thinking is on that.
And that's it. And they were done talking about it. This article is fairly repugnant, says Berman. All right, well, okay. And flat out anti-Semitic. I'll give you that. But listen to what this Elrod chick says. You gotta sometimes read below the first two sentences of anything you're tweeting before you decide if you agree with that. Huh? The first two sentences, America's Jews are driving America's wars. Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. That's a great plan. And by the way, one of the things here, I gotta find this. One of the things that she tweeted out in defense of her position, or kind of excusing herself, is she said this part about the neocons. Calm down. Retweets don't imply endorsement. Yes, very provocative, but thoughtful. Many neocon hawks are Jewish. So I look at this, and I start going through the article. I'm like, okay, so she's defending the article, and she's read the neocon criticism. She's read the neocon criticism. And so I look down and I try to find I try to find where the neocon criticism are, and the criticism is neocons as a group were founded by Jews and are largely Jewish. This is weird stuff. This is not okay stuff. I mean, I dispute that, but she's putting in there John Podoritz and other people, the National Review types, and some of them. Hey, look, William F. Buckley Jr. It's not even historically accurate, but she's taking a movement that she doesn't like. This is the key thing. She hates neocons. She's fought neocons. She's a big leftist. Doesn't like neocons, and is saying they're founded by Jews. It was a movement founded by Jews. This is classic anti-Semitic scapegoating. It's disgusting. And you know what bothers me, I think, the most in all of this? If this were the other way around, if this were somebody who was sympathetic, but sympathetic to the Trump administration, this would be front page news, and CNN would be saying a lot more than just like, well, you got to read below the first two sentences of anything that you retweet. Trust me. Double standard? You betcha. All right. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. We'll be back right after the news by John Wolf. Don't go anywhere.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, and we're coming to you, I think, I hope, loud and clear from the Sweet James Studios. We're located in an undisclosed location on the right side of the orange curtain, 1-800-222-5222. If you'd like to be on the program, sam@samnation.com is my email. I do check that all the time. So, Valerie Plame, the former CIA covert operative, quote-unquote, more of an analyst, sent out a tweet today of an article that, well, says this. America's Jews are driving America's wars. Now, she first tried to weasel out of it saying, look, I didn't read the whole article and this and that, and I there's only parts of it that I agreed with. But here's the thesis of the article. Because I suspect, even though Valerie Plame is, I think, a largely tangential figure in the greater sphere of left-wing politics, I suspect that there are a lot more liberals out there who have closeted antipathies towards Israel. And this explains, in large part, Obama and the way Obama approached Iran. If you're wondering why we're in such a crap deal with Iran today, it's because of the Obaminator. And because Obama held, trust me on this, this is not a huge stretch. Did Obama like it? What did Obama do for Israel when he was president? Kicked Israel in the frickin' shins every chance he got. Listen to this line here from the article. Quote, but what makes the war engine run is provided by American Jews who have taken upon themselves the onerous task of starting a war with a country, Iran, that does not conceivably threaten the United States. They, meaning American Jews, have been very successful at faking the Iranian threat, so much so that nearly all Republican and most Democratic congressmen as well, as much of the media, seem to be convinced that Iran needs to be dealt with firmly. Aha. So that's it. It's all a big, giant head fake. The Jews' fault. I mean, come on. This is like straight out of Goebbels, right? Blame the Jews. But beyond it, there's something even more sinister, because it's easy to just read this article and say, well, this is some kook, although this guy's a former member of the intelligence community. Remember the Democrats always telling us how great our intelligence community is? And what do I always say? Hey, the intelligence community is as diverse as we are. There's some real kooks in the intelligence community. Well, case in point. But beyond that, it helps to understand why the past administration, filled with die-in-the-wool liberals, put us in such a dangerous predicament with Iran in the first place. Because they saw Iran as the victim in a polarized, you know, conflict with Israel. And this is just absurd. Hey, I'll just ask a very simple, basic question. If I'm going to New York City and I'm walking around the streets of New York, am I worried about a terrorist attack from a radical Jewish, you know, operative? No, I'm not in the least. I'm not. But am I worried that perhaps an Iran-funded Hamas terrorist is going to go blow me up on a street corner? You betcha. So you know what? It's not the Jewish media that convinced me of this, okay? I did not suddenly, you know, drop from the sky and now am worried about Iran and the threat it poses. By the way, Iran, number one banker of terrorism in the world, okay? And that is a fact. So this kind of thinking, though, permeated the left. And the evidence, the fruit of it, is our nation's foreign policy in the last 8 years under Obama. It's just shameful and disgusting. All right. You know who's not shameful or disgusting? In fact, all around a swell guy. One clue. He's sweet and his name is James. That's right. And he's going to be here next. He's already in the studio. He's here, right? He's here. All right. Sweet James in the studio. We're going to lighten this up a little bit and have some fun. Ask him some questions. So don't go anywhere. Sweet James up next. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And as promised, we have a guest in studio. He's got a dense beard. He has justice just oozing out of him everywhere. Sweet James, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing well. I can't believe they let me in here again. I'm so happy.
Well, you know, they're probably like, who are you? And what are you doing in the Sweet James studios?
Every time. Yep.
And you're like, well, I'm Sweet James. So let me in. Hey, I have a question for you. So
yes, sir.
You know, we've got the hockey season coming up. And we actually game tomorrow night.
Go Kings, go!
That's right. And there was a bit of sports news yesterday. I say sports news because that's where I put sports in one big pot, one big giant category. So they're at a Yankees game because there's baseball going on too. Apparently, there's like multiple sports that go on at the same time.
There are certain times of the year. That's right.
Stunning. at any rate, so I've got I heard that Yankee Stadium was a little girl. It was tragically hit by a foul ball in the stands, and apparently she's pretty badly hurt. Did you hear about this?
I did. That's very unfortunate.
Now, does this happen often?
It does. Surprisingly, it does. Now, most of the injuries are not that severe. This little girl, however, is being as young as she was, she took a very hard shot, and our thoughts and prayers are with her, and she's expected to make a full recovery, so we hope so.
Well, now, look, her parents, her dad, I think her dad was there, took her to the game, and obviously his little girl's hurt. So does he, if he decides to call Sweet James, or a far more inferior attorney, but at any rate, if he decides to call somebody and ask, you know, do I have a case, what would you tell him?
Well, everyone has a case. Winning is always the issue. Here, the chances of winning are nil, slim to none.
Wait, really? Yeah, nothing? Like zero recovery?
Yeah. There's a legal term called assumption of the risk. If you go to a baseball game and you sit right there off of off one of the plates or one of the first or third baseline, you are expected to see foul balls come whizzing by you, and if you get hit, that is on you, and that is unfortunate, but that is on the back of that ticket. You assume the risk when you enter into that stadium.
So I think this is important because you know, the initial part, what we're talking about is how this happens all the time.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that's the factor, right? It happens enough and often enough to where, regardless of what's written on the back of the ticket, you know, disclaimer of rights and that kind of thing. But regardless of what all of that, you know that by sitting in a stadium, you're going to have a ball whiz through the air and potentially hit you on the noggin.
Yeah, I've been to baseball games and had foul balls whiz by my head.
No
yeah,
way.
Absolutely.
Do you bring a glove to games?
I wonder. You know, that's a rite of passage for most kids, but I have not brought a glove in years.
Yeah, no, I love the people that bring gloves to the games. And then I think most of the injuries come from those people trampling other spectators in their seats.
Yes.
Going for the foul ball.
Yeah, we see that too. You do.
Now, we don't have any baseball fans listening. These are all hockey fans.
Yes.
These are all real, honest-to-goodness Americans. No, Americans.
Americans.
These are people that bleed for their sport, especially Kings fans, right? The tough bunch.
Absolutely.
All right, so now, you know that somebody got hit by a puck last season? Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I did.
So the guy's sitting in the is sitting behind the glass, and they have a teeny-eensy-weensy hole for a camera that it can't be very big, you know, a couple inches, 3 inches, whatever, or just enough for the puck to whiz through. And I guess this guy, hold on, I'll get you his name. He's with the Colorado Avalanche. Francois Beachman. I don't know how they pronounce this. If it was a Slavic name, I could do it. Because if it's Murjovsky, I can pronounce that.
You got that one down, right?
So, I mean, I'm curious. It doesn't happen as often.
Not in hockey.
Now, does the same rule apply?
The same rule applies. Going to a hockey game, that is an assumption that you might get hit by an errant puck.
This is fascinating. Do you have time to hang in here? I mean, I know you.
Yeah.
I know time is precious, and you've got insurance companies and various defendants to slay and beat. But you got a few more minutes for us. Can we hold you over? All right, folks, don't go anywhere. We've got Sweet James in the studios answering questions. We got a couple fun things to ask him here right after the break. Don't go anywhere. Sam Murjovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
Sam Murjovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We've got Sweet James himself in the studios. And thanks for hanging in there through the break, James. Really, really glad to have you. Now, we're talking about, well, there was that foul ball that went into the stands at Yankee Stadium, hit a little girl in the head, and you say no recovery there. And then last season, since we've got a lot of hockey fans out there, last season there was a puck at an NHL game that went through the little camera hole in the glass, hit a guy in the face, and did you hear about the story? The guy basically, he stayed through the rest of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a tough SOB.
He's a hockey fan.
Right.
I mean, Sarah Palin talked about that years ago, right? About hockey fans.
Yeah. Well, no, notoriously tough. And also, you know, you don't have to be good looking in hockey and have your teeth.
Yeah, that's optional.
Teeth are optional. So, and I say that, by the way, you know, I'm Czech. So this is, hockey is in our blood. This is our national sport. Soccer is a close second, but hockey is the big deal.
Yeah.
And so these injuries do happen at these games, and so the point that I think the audience needs to know could there be a case at a game? Is it just precluded with balls hitting them and pucks hitting them, or can you get hurt at a stadium at all in any way, shape, or form, and have it be a case that's compensable?
Yes, you can. Now that's a good question. Now if you go to a baseball game and you get hit by a baseball, that is expected. Hockey game, you get hit by a puck, that's expected. You go to a hockey game, though, and there's a defect and there's a slip and fall, or they fail to maintain an area, that's unexpected. That's something that's recoverable. Years ago, I had a case at a baseball game where they fire the T-shirt cannon up, you know, and there's a big stampede to get a T-shirt. And I have a woman who suffered significant injuries, and we were able to settle that case.
Because she got trampled.
Because you don't assume that's going to happen at a baseball game.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's the reasonableness of what happened. You expect that to happen. If you do, you're precluded from recovery. But if it's something that you don't expect, or something that's a failure that the stadium owner did to keep everybody safe, you can recover for something like
that. What if you're at one of those all-you-can-eat buffets? and no, wait, this is a serious hypothetical.
I love it.
You're at like a Chuck-O-Rama. I don't want to throw any particular brand under the bus here. But, sure. You know, like one of those places where really big people go to indulge in their dining habits. Now, you go there and you sit down and you're just normally like weighted person, you know, maybe you're, you know, 5, 10, 15 pounds over, but nothing big. And you sit down in a chair and smash, the chair breaks underneath you. Now, is that don't you assume some amount of risk there? I mean, that restaurant has had, you know, people, you know, sit on those chairs that may have
weakened over time by the, no, that you would not be assuming the risk by sitting on a chair at an all-you-can-eat buffet.
I don't know. Isn't this what defense attorneys, though, do? Like, they sit around and come up with ridiculous ways of how to screw people out of money.
Yeah. And it's shameful, some of the antics that I see from the defense side.
Yeah, well, and that's why people got to call you. Remember, I mean, they got to call you, and even if they think that maybe they don't have a case, right? I mean, you talk to people all the time, and send them, you know, potentially send them packing, but you at least tell them what they need to know.
Absolutely,
give them good advice and all that good stuff. All right, the Kings are on tomorrow night. Stay clear of any pucks, even if you're listening to the game on the radio. And we're going to be back on Monday. We're going to be back Monday night at 7 o'clock. I'm looking forward to that. And James, man, always great to see you. Thanks for coming by and thanks for your support of the show.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. Have a great day.